About 25% of all heart attacks or sudden cardiac deaths in the United States are caused by individuals felt to be at low risk. It's actually a very striking finding. My father was at low risk. He had a sudden heart attack, a classic example of such an individual. If these individuals could be identified earlier, primary prevention could be started before costlier and more invasive interventions are necessary. Interventional radiologists have found that using commonly and readily available screening tests has the potential to prevent heart attacks in thousands of individuals not thought to be at risk. Here to detail the results of this study is Dr. Timothy Cianci, Murphy, an interventional radiologist and director of the Vascular Disease Center at Rhode Island Hospital in Providence. Dr. Murphy.
Thank you, Dr. Kaufman. Good morning, everyone. Firstly, I'd like to acknowledge the work of Dr. Raj Dangana, who is a research fellow at my hospital, who was instrumental in performing this work. I have no conflicts to disclose. As Bob mentioned, coronary heart disease is highly prevalent in the U.S., responsible for about 1 in 5 deaths. 1.2 million people suffer coronary events each year, and about 40% die. Primary prevention is known to be very effective. As Bob mentioned, at least 25% of MIs or sudden cardiac deaths occur in people who have no known risk factors. And it's actually even a little bit worse than that. If you take out people who have known coronary heart disease or prior cardiovascular disease, as well as people with diabetes, the vast majority of heart attacks and cardiac sudden deaths occur in people who would be determined to be low or intermediate risk, probably 80 to 85%. So identifying people for prevention is important, and this paper is going to focus on that segment of the population, as I just mentioned, which are not known to already have what's known as a coronary heart disease equivalent. Risk assessment for most individuals is usually done using what's known as the Framingham risk variables, and you know what they are: heart attack, smoking, blood pressure, etc. I'm sorry, high blood pressure, smoking, and high cholesterol, dyslipidemia. It turns out that 75% of adults are in the low or intermediate risk category when the Framingham risk variables are used. And again, these are not people with known diabetes or prior cardiovascular disease. There are a number of biomarkers that have been looked at to try to improve risk prediction to identify people in the low and intermediate risk categories for aggressive medical intervention that could reduce their risk of heart attacks and coronary sudden death. And today we're focusing on the ankle brachial index, plasma fibrinogen, and plasma C-reactive protein. It is known that all of these three variables are associated with an increased relative risk compared with people who don't have abnormal markers, even when adjusted for their Framingham risk score, so even in low and intermediate risk populations. However, the prevalence of these biomarkers and abnormal levels in the general population is not known. The purpose of this study was to obtain the U.S. population prevalence estimates for abnormal ABI, fibrinogen, and or CRP for individuals without known CHD equivalents with lower intermediate risk Framingham risk score, the purpose being that that could then point to the potential for these tests to be used as screening tests to help assess risk, similar in the way that mammography or colonoscopy is used, that is, not for people with symptoms, but for a large segment of the population, for example, people over the age of 50. The definitions: high Framingham risk is defined as people with a known, calculated, greater than 20% 10-year risk of a coronary event. Those people are already considered CHD equivalent. They are usually treated with intensive medical therapy to avoid risk. That's not the population that we're looking at. Other populations that are known to have CHD equivalent are people with established cardiovascular disease or people with diabetes. And we use generally accepted definitions of abnormal ABI, plasma fibrinogen, and C-reactive protein. We obtained data from the National Health and Nutritional Examination Survey, which is conducted by the Center of Disease Control. The sampling is complex, and it's done so that their sample specifically represents the U.S. population. We limited our analysis to people in NHANES who are age 40 or older, in whom ABI, fibrinogen, C-reactive protein were available, and also who had all the Framingham variables, so we could calculate their risk of cardiovascular events according to the Framingham risk score. As I said, we excluded people who were known to have a CHD equivalent. Those are people with diabetes, prior heart attacks, prior strokes, etc. After all the exclusions, we had a population of 6,292 people. As part of NHANES, detailed histories and physical examinations are done. Additionally, blood tests and ankle brachial indexes were done using standard methods. We calculated the Framingham risk score based on the Framingham variables using the standard accepted method for that. And we obtained the prevalence estimates for abnormal ABI, fibrinogen, and C-reactive protein for those people who were calculated to be low and intermediate risk. And these are the overall results in our population. ABI was abnormal in 3.7%, fibrinogen in 17.3%, and abnormal C-reactive protein in 37.9%. This is the entire population. This isn't just low or intermediate. This is breaking it down between low and intermediate risk for the ABI, fibrinogen, and C-reactive protein. And you can see that even in the low and intermediate Framingham risk category, these variables that are associated with adverse cardiovascular outcomes are prevalent, with ABI being present in about abnormal ABI in about 3%, abnormal fibrinogen in about 17%, and abnormal CRP in about 38%. When we looked at all three of the variables, just to determine if any of them were abnormal in the population, about 44% in the low and intermediate risk category had one of these biomarkers that were abnormal that potentially point to an increased risk of cardiovascular events. So the conclusion is that these biomarkers that have potential to identify people in the low and intermediate risk category for intensive medical therapy to avoid heart attacks and strokes are very prevalent. It's known to be associated with increased risk despite lower intermediate risk category, and this raises the potential that they could be very effective due to this wide prevalence in our population as screening tests for a certain segment of our population. Thank you very much.
Questions for Dr. Murphy? Oh, up here.
Crystal Fenn, PhD. How could you very briefly describe how is the ankle brachial index?
Yeah, that's
did
a good question.
Did everybody hear that?
So the question was
the question?
Yeah. Why? How is the ankle brachial index measured? The reason that we studied these three variables is because they are easy to obtain, potentially widely available, inexpensive, and safe. The ankle brachial index is very simply a ratio of the blood pressure done at the ankle to the blood pressure obtained at the arm. It requires a little different method to detect the pulse in the foot than a stethoscope, but essentially it's an identical process. It's the same cuff, it's a different pulse detector. So usually it's done with a handheld Doppler probe, which is an inexpensive piece of equipment. Well, that's a very good question. So if these tests are to be, if the ankle brachial index, since it's so widely abnormal, is to be used as a screening test, how could that be implemented? Traditionally, this test was only available in the vascular specialist's office, so it would be an interventional radiologist or a vascular surgeon who traditionally could be able to perform this examination. If it's to be done for a large segment of the population, say men over 50 and women over 60, just as an example, it would need to be much more widely available than that.
Stephen Greenhouse from Interventional News. Of that 45% that had one of the markers of peripheral vascular disease, how much had an abnormal ABI versus the other two markers?
Well, that's a very good question. The question is the relative prevalence of ABI versus the other two markers. The ABI is the least prevalent, but it's potentially the one that offers the most potential. And we didn't look at this in this study, but the ABI is an indicator of established atherosclerotic disease. So if you have somebody who calculates as low or intermediate risk, but they're known to have substantial atherosclerotic burden, there's some intuitive appeal that that's a patient who might warrant from intensive medical therapy. Fibrinogen and C-reactive protein are markers for other processes that are ongoing. They may or may not have the same discriminative ability that the ABI has, and in fact, the CRP is much more common, being abnormal in about 38% of our population. you almost question whether that's too many. That might be more noise and less signal than we'd like to have in a screening exam. Some of that needs to be worked out with longitudinal follow-up studies, which we don't have. We just have a cross-sectional study looking at a sample of the U.S. population at one point in time just to look at the prevalence. We're using just an ABI below 0.9, and there are a number of... Well, anything below 0.9...
No, I know that it's the science. 45% have a problem. 38% of that 45% have CRP, which we don't know whether that's important or not. The ABI is clearly the exciting thing, which is still millions of people. How many had an ABI of less than 0.9?
The total was 4%, and it was roughly 3% in the low intermediate risk category.
So 3%?
Yes.
Good question. No, up here.
Dr. Goldstein, could you comment on this?
Yeah. I think that we've known, my comment is we've known about the fact that ABIs are correlated with heart disease for a long time. Very simply put, the tibial arteries going down to the foot are the same size as the heart arteries, the coronary arteries, and therefore involvement there would imply disease there. So what this does is put some meat on the bone in the sense that we know just rather than that it's correlated, now it's giving us valuable information as to how we should proceed and what recommendations we need to make to primary care doctors. The bottom line is, you know, should we start recommending and will we start recommending to primary care doctors that an ABI be done in the office as a routine part of your cardiovascular risk profile?
Yeah, and there's an issue in that it's not reimbursed as a screening. There are only certain screening tests that are approved by Medicare. So that's an interesting point that Bob brings up, is if we made that recommendation, it would be pretty onerous because there's no way for them to get paid for that work right now.
Having said that, a well-trained individual can do a quick ABI. Yeah, well, quickly. I mean, it could be a 5-minute test in a lot of people. So, you know, like getting your blood pressure checked. All right. Thank you.